We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 263. On today's show, Brian Hoke joins us in the back half of this episode. Scott, you had a chance to catch up with him. He has not been on the podcast in a while. But before all that, we have to discuss the Yankees' just terrible, terrible series to the White Sox.
Yeah, it's been not so good. I heard today they were talking about this is the first time that they've lost a series to the White Sox at home since 2005, I think they said. That's a long time. That's a team that obviously does not come into Yankee Stadium and beat up on the New York Yankees. And this week, it did happen, and the Yankees played very sloppy, kind of par for the course, I think, what we've seen. Even though they've been winning some games, you know, as of lately, against teams like Baltimore, couldn't do it against Chicago, and really it showed. The sloppiness was very apparent.
I was actually pretty surprised at how flat they looked on Monday's game after sweeping the four-game series over the weekend. It kind of felt like they finally gotten over a hump. They beat the Orioles, who they struggled with all year. You're probably laughing at that at home. It's like, well, they're the crappy Orioles. They're going to lose 115 games this season. What hump are you talking about? Well, the Yankees hadn't been able to beat them, and they swept a doubleheader, and they swept a four-game series, and it was a good momentum push where the Red Sox struggled that weekend, and they were kind of clawing back into the race. You see the Red Sox kind of having some injuries and all that stuff. You think you get a glimmer of hope, maybe just a little glimmer of hope that maybe the division is not over. They come out on Monday and look like crap.
Well, I mean, I think one of the biggest things too, though, is that you see how fast the tide can turn. I mean, because it definitely happened on a dime. It seems like the Yankees were, what, 10 and a half games out, and then all of a sudden you blink your eyes, and, you know, they, as of this morning, as of today, before the game, they were, you know, six games in the loss column. So it can happen quickly, if obviously if one team is taking advantage of those, the losses. But yeah, the problem is right now is they're just not playing good baseball. And the reason for that, one of the big reasons for that, is because they are man down big time. And it's not just the guys that aren't there, but it's also affecting them because the guys who are there have to play every day. Even if you would normally get days off, even if you're in a slump and need some rest, these guys have to play. There's nobody else. So, you know, I think it affects the guys who are actually there as well, all these injuries.
That's a good point. Yeah, hopefully they're going to be manning up in a couple weeks with Didi and Sanchez scheduled to come back once they go west. And then who knows, maybe by September 15th, the final Bronx Pinstripes crew event of the season, Aaron Judge might be at least holding a baseball bat. Can we at least get that at that point?
yeah, dry swings. Can we get some dry humping swings? I mean, It's pretty crazy how he's taken forever, but yeah, this hopefully he'll be able to hold a bat and you know, great scenario would be him actually playing, but it's looking bleak and bleak. But if you are going to the September 15th game, make sure you guys go out and get your tickets. Again, we're doing the promotion for if you bring your crew 10 or more, you get your ticket as the captain of that crew for free. If you do it 5 or more, you get half off of your ticket. So send those messages out. Get your friends together. This is the last one of the season. It's going to be a good time, and it's always fun to kind of celebrate a good season and a fun season hanging out with all the other Yankee fans and the BP crew. And we'll have that all culminated really for September 15th. So go get your tickets.
All right, so as we were saying, the current standings, now the Yankees are 7 games in back of the Red Sox because they swept the 2 games against the Marlins. They struggled to do so. They had to walk it off on Tuesday, and then the Red Sox scored 11 runs in the 7th inning after being down early to the Marlins. But they did lose Price. We don't know how long he's going to be out. He took a liner off the wrist. And I'm saying all this because, like you just said, with the Yankees being down, well, the Red Sox are also going through some of this stuff too, with Sale on the disabled list and possibly Price missing a few starts now with that liner.
Yeah, I mean, and it's an opportunity that the Yankees have, and really, you know, have to take advantage of it. And they did the job. They did what they needed to do in Baltimore. And, you know, Chicago, who's been playing better, I mean, they're not a good team, but they've been playing better as of late, came in and just didn't make them the Yankees made a bunch of mistakes, and the White Sox took advantage of it. And today, we're looking at a guy who's been a minor leaguer pretty much for a long time, and come in and hit his second career home run and drive in all of their runs. One guy, and it's just one of those things where the Yankees played sloppy tonight. But they also had some terrible luck, I think, with Stanton hitting the ball pretty hard. The ball that goes behind the catcher, and they make even a bad throw, but a pick, and get right. Glaber at home.
Like, they did everything wrong, and still Glaber got was it. Still out.
It was so frustrating. Yeah, so there's a lot of things that, just the ball certainly didn't bounce their way tonight either. But they got to take advantage of these opportunities. When you have a Red Sox team that is losing, you got to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I think at one point Cohn said on the broadcast the Yankees had 6 balls hit over 95 miles an hour and none of them were hits.
Yeah. That's bad luck.
But the bad luck thing, like you just said, I understand, but it's still not an excuse to lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox.
Well, I mean, bad luck is bad luck. It definitely contributes to fluky wins like that. So, I mean, if you're going to lose a game and bad luck has to do with it, and you're hitting the ball hard, you're squaring it up and doing those things, they're just not dropping. That's just baseball, Susan. I mean,
but they were doing other bad things too.
Other bad things also. There were other bad things that happened. Yes, but I mean, look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. They got to beat these teams, but they need to at least win the series. That's it. They need to focus on winning the series.
The defense, I thought, was atrocious, especially in the first game. They made 3 errors on Monday and then 2 errors on Tuesday. There was a point late in that game on Tuesday where in the series to that point, they had more errors than hits. I know things changed. They stole that win. They totally stole that win with the all the home runs late on Tuesday. But Andujar made a few bad plays at third base. Stanton could not make a play out in right field. And then the Greg Bird dropped easy chest-high throw to lead off the game on Tuesday was kind of just like the cherry on top of everything. But what that meant is Tanaka had to throw more pitches. Lance Lynn had to throw more pitches. The bullpen had to come in earlier. And it just piles up.
Yeah, no, the defense has been sloppy for quite some time now. I feel like everybody's been on Andujar's butt for making these errors. And yes, he's made a bunch of errors. But you look at some of the numbers, and even Torres, I think when you think of Gleyber Torres and on broad strokes, and you're thinking of him as a defender, people are like, a lot of people who didn't know those numbers and didn't see the numbers and remember every single error would say, yes, he's a good defender. The guy makes good plays. He makes the flashy plays. And then you see some of him, he makes some of the bonehead ones. But he's got 15 errors in 96 games, whereas Andujar has got 14 in 114. So Andujar is actually, when you're looking at the number of errors, is doing better than Torres right now. It's kind of crazy. The eye doesn't make you believe that.
Yeah, but we know. We talked to Brian Kenny. The error is not the end-all be-all to measure someone's defense.
Sure. That's fine, but when you're thinking about the two of them, I think Andujar's just get more attention because it seems like, one, they're bad looking, very bad looking when his feet are not there, and then the other ones are when he makes the extra little pad of the hand, and then it's a timing thing, and those are frustrating because he's there, he can make the throw, he just made it late, and
it's
that happened
double
a number
clutching.
Of times.
The yeah. double clutching on the throw is what pisses me off the most because that seems so correctable. I don't know if that's a nervous tick or what it is, but it's the double crow hop, double tap that really gets him in trouble. Very, very often.
Did you hear the A-Rod breakdown of the drills that they were doing, the Sunday night breakdown that A-Rod had? This was actually some pretty good information.
He was
talking about what he was working with Andujar, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but apparently Andujar, when he was taking ground balls, he was taking them more casually and doing like a 5-second clip from hitting the bat. The bat hitting the ball, fielding the ball, getting over to first. It was like 5-point-something seconds or something like that. And A-Rod said that you got to practice that at a faster pace so that you're practicing more like the play. And they were cutting it down to like 3 seconds or something like that, where the ball, he's just getting it in his glove and getting it out of his glove fast. And, I mean, that's a good drill that he needs to do. That's probably something that he should work on quite often in the offseason and just get that internal clock down, a good a second to 2 seconds earlier, because he is taking his sweet ass time over there sometimes. His footwork is not the greatest, so that could also set up to an elongated, way that you throw to first base. There's just a number of things that he needs to clean up, but nice little nugget from A-Rod there.
I think what I was talking about this on Twitter a couple weeks ago, that perhaps the most underrated aspect of A-Rod's career is how easily he transitioned from shortstop to third base. Instantly, in the 2004, his first season at third base, first time he had ever played there other than in a stupid All-Star game, he was one of the best defenders at third base. So, I don't know. I just figured I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're such a big A-Rod. I wasn't teeing this up as to, like, let's just get on A-Rod for good things. Because he went over to first base and looked like a little leaguer. I mean,
yeah,
how do you explain that?
Quick Yankees defensive update stat. This comes from Frank Marco. He does some of our he writes on the website and he looks up some of the stats that we do on the podcast here. So on July 3rd, the Yankees were plus 17 run defensive runs saved as a team, and right now as we stand here on August 29th, they are minus one. So they have really been declining on the defensive side. I think part of it is having Judge out and Didi out. It's very glaring when both of those guys are out. It displaces other people. So Glaber has to go from second to short. That weakens second base. And then you have Walker in there, Torres in there, who are not as good defenders as Glaber, despite the fact you just said the 15 errors. He's still on the advanced metric side, shows pretty well. And then Stanton, for as solid as he is in right field, is not Aaron Judge.
Well, and neither is Shane Robinson or Neil Walker.
God,
because,
no.
Because these guys are going out there as well and trying to play right field too. So, yeah, I mean, having Judge out of the lineup and out of the field, you know, playing defense in right field is a huge deal. And then even Didi now has been out at shortstop. So you're switching guys all around. And I mean, I got to give a lot of credit. Like that's a bad number. The fact that they're, you know, they've had that big of a swing. But I got to say, there's a lot of credit that needs to go to Neil Walker. I feel like we crushed him so badly in the beginning of the season. And honestly, this guy has been one of the saviors of this team while these injuries have been happening. He's going out the right field, and yes, he's made a couple bad errors, but he also has played some decent right field, but he's not a right fielder.
You can't get on him for making a mistake in right field. He's been an infielder his whole life.
Yeah, he played third base today. He's played first and second. Like, the guy's played all over the place.
Good.
And ever since the All-Star break has been hitting. So, I mean, I just want to shout out Neil Walker again, because the dude has been unbelievable. And I feel a little bad for the beginning of the season because the guy...
Why, though?
Because
he was actually having a worse offensive season than Chris Carter was last year. We did the comparison metrics. The guy,
no, I know that.
He was historically bad offensively.
But
and
the thing
we,
is...
We even said, well, this isn't the real Neil Walker. Like, we have
years of data to show us that
Neil Walker is a better major league player than
right.
this.
And that's the reason, I think. That's why I think I feel a little bad about him. Because, one, now he's doing well, so... You know, what have you done for me lately? And he's done a lot for me lately. So there's a tad bit of guilt on the amount of hatred that I have spewed towards Mr. Neil Walker.
All right, maybe you should feel some guilt for jinxing Sonny Gray this season.
I don't feel any guilt for that, because he's just that's all him. He's just weak. He's weak between the ears.
The injuries are definitely a factor on this team right now, and it's something that I see people bitching about on social media. Well, why is Boone sitting Bird, sitting Romine, sitting Gardner against Rodon, a left-handed pitcher, and playing Shane Robinson, playing Neil Walker, who's not as good from the right side, and playing Luke Voit? Well, what do you want him to do? This is the bench he is given right now. He is not the one who's supposed to go out there and trade for or claim another outfielder on waivers. That's Brian Cashman's job. All Boone can do is play the players that are in the roster. And everyone was loving Luke Voit after the monster weekend he had, so of course he's going to be in there. And then Romine or Higgy offensively, I really don't see that much of a difference. Romine has been terrible offensively lately. And Gardner is hitting 200 in the month of August. So what is Boone to do as far as the lineup construction goes with the players that he's given right now?
And he's got to give Gardner a day off here and there. He's got to. I mean, not only is he in a horrible slump, and we know how streaky he is, and part of it is because he plays all the time and plays hard and usually plays beaten up a little bit. So Gardner's got to get his days off. He's not getting any younger. And the fact that, you know, he really hasn't had the convenience for someone to go out there who's worth a damn to go out and play left field for him. You know, ever since Judge has gone down, he's been playing you know, all the time. So getting him in a rest against a tough lefty, I don't hate that at all. It's just the problem is the guy who's going in for him. That's the problem. But you got to get that guy a day off here and there.
Right. I mean, Gardner's hitting 200 in the month of August, but what is Shane Robinson? He's half that. So
literally,
exactly. So, I mean, I guess you could say stop leading Brett Gardner off even against right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, you know, the thing is with Gardner is he's got to get that rest in between, because I feel like he's got that he needs to reset the engines a little bit. And when you have a fully, you know, a full array of outfielders and a fourth and fifth guy that you can actually depend on and can go in there and give you a, you know, some good at bats and some good field, then you know, you can sprinkle in some days off for him. But I really think that's contributing more to, you know, the sinking ship of his batting average and the slump that he's in. I mean, we all know that he goes through slumps in the second half of the season. He's been doing that for most of his career. It's just what happens with him. He breaks down. But there is a point where he can, you know, get to a good place. And I think those days off contribute to that.
And perhaps an underrated aspect for Stanton, at least, and him playing through all of these injuries, he's been dealing with a nagging hamstring for a while now, and he has only missed one game the entire season, and he's played 82 consecutive games. So at least he's been there every day in the lineup, especially while Judge is out. I know he's struggling. He is on a 6-for-39 slide since he hit home run number 299. I don't know what it is about these players that when they're about to hit another milestone of home runs or whatever it is, it just gets in their head and they can't do it. It happened with A-Rod time and time again with 499, 599. I was going to say 699, then I realized he never got there.
I mean, I think it's just a little bit of pressing for a lot of these guys when they have those milestones. But, I mean, yeah, a lot of credit goes to Stanton. I mean, granted, he hasn't been in right field all those times. He was DHing certain times because of the hamstring. And that just brings another guy like Shane Robinson with another start and putting him in the lineup. And again, there's not much that Boone can do because he doesn't have the players that he needs to actually form a decent lineup, unfortunately. That's the situation right now. They didn't go out and get anybody. Cashman has sat on his hands. Apparently, he either didn't like the deals or they just don't like the players that are available right now. Curtis Granderson, people are pining for. Like, I personally don't think we're going to get much of an upgrade with a guy like Curtis Granderson. And, you know, obviously someone else feels that, or the Blue Jays were asking for something more, which I have a hard time believing, but I don't know. There's just only so much you can do when those players are not in your clubhouse and you have, you know, the guys that you're given.
Yeah, and rosters are expanding in a few days at this point. So, I mean, Shane Robinson will still be there, but at least they can use other pieces during that time as well.
Give me some McBroomy, baby. Come on. Give me McBroom.
So we're talking about the injuries and everything, but it doesn't really hide the fact that the Yankees went up against James Shields, Lopez tonight, who has been really not good the entire season, and Rodon, who has been good and got shut down for pretty much three straight games. The only time they had an offensive outburst was late in the game on Tuesday when they got into the bullpen of the White Sox, and Andujar, Hicks, and Walker all hit the home runs.
Basically two guys with 15, I think 15 losses. Didn't Alex Cobb have 15 losses when he came out and basically shut the Yankees down the first time they faced him? Alex Cobb and James Shields, who I think also has 15 losses.
That's a big game, James Shields.
A lot of losses for those two pitchers, and then just completely shutting down the Yankees.
It was big game James Shields versus big guy Lance Lynn on Tuesday.
Yeah, and apparently James Shields turned back the clock and was able to pitch like he did, you know, back when he was actually big game James with the Royals. But, you know, the guy's been around for a while. He's a crafty guy. I think he tied either strikeouts or wins or one of those with Jim Palmer. So he's climbing the list of all-time greats because he's been around for a long time. What is he, 35, 36 years old?
I feel like James Shields has been in the league forever.
Yeah.
And he's been on a million teams after he left Tampa.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that when he was when he started he was in the league young. So that's what one of the reasons why he feels like he's been around forever. And he's old. I think he's 35 or 36 years old. So
Well, doesn't that worry you, though, that a guy like James Shields is able to pitch well against the Yankees lineup? He was able to get through Gardner and Stanton and Hicks and Andujar and Gleyber Torres. Those are all guys who are going to be in there in a one-game wild card or hopefully deeper into October. Doesn't that worry you? What happens when they go up against an actually a good pitcher?
Yeah, they'll level up to their competition. Isn't that what we do?
Level up to Rodon, though? He's having a good season. His ERA, he's got a great ERA this year.
Yeah, he's still wearing a White Sox uniform, so they didn't level up because of that. I got no answers for you. There's no rhyme or reason why this team takes days off and then all of a sudden puts up, you know, a 10 spot on a particular day. There's no rhyme or reason for it, honestly, because some of these we're seeing at home, and then some of them we're seeing on the road. Judge is no longer – we don't have no idea when he's going to be back, if he's back at all. When I was talking with Hoke, we were talking about that. He thinks he's going to be back. He feels like he's going to be back. And he does talk about, as we kind of spoke about last episode, about this being a pain tolerance issue. If it does come down to that, that they don't think that he can re-injure the hand by just going out there and playing. So eventually it very well could be a pain tolerance issue. And he may be coming back when he's still feeling pain in that wrist at some point, as long as it's low enough for him to tolerate. So, you know, it's going to be tough sledding down the stretch for sure.
That's what I had said last time, that I really see that happening, is that just give it a shot. If he can come back in the last week of the season and play through it and be decent, then great. But if not, then you just hang it up for the season, unfortunately. I can't believe this is what we're saying. A full month he got hurt on July 26th. It's now August 29th. He was supposed to be back for a week already, was the original estimate, which I am shocked by, because the Yankees always overestimate things because it's just the classic under-deliver. What is it? Underestimate, over-deliver, right? Is that how the saying goes? That's what they usually do. Instead, they over-promised and under-delivered.
Yeah, they don't usually do that. And, you know, I think when the injury first happened, Judge kind of downplayed it himself too, and almost talked about it like, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. And now a month later, he's still on a, you know, he's gone from a 5 to a 4 on the pain scale. Is that a pain scale of 1 through 5, or is that a 10 scale?
He said it's a 1 through 10 scale.
Okay. So, I mean, we're still, you know, he's not like he's making a ton of progress at a quick pace, and we're running out of games. You know, there are a whole other element. There's a lot of other stuff that goes into that too, like rehab. How are you gonna rehab when the minor league system is their season's closing up soon too? There's a bunch of things going into, you know, getting him back and getting him game ready. At what point? I think that it's interesting that the doctors don't think that he can re-injure it, because that's something you certainly don't want to put him in a situation where this fracture could become worse, or could be, you know, the fracture could actually either get bigger or just, you know, linger on for longer. That is something that they don't want to be. I don't want to be talking about this in January and February leading up to spring training.
He's at a 4 pain tolerance. I basically go through life at a 4 pain tolerance.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I hit 35, I'm like all day 4 pain tolerance.
So I understand I'm not going out there and playing baseball for the Yankees, but I feel confident. What I'm saying is I feel confident that when it comes down to it, Aaron Judge will nut up and go out there if he needs to.
Yeah, I'm just afraid that it's not going to be up to him. That's what I'm thinking.
But again, if the doctors say that you can't do any more damage, then what's the harm?
We'll see. We'll see if they actually, I mean, again, we'll see if that actually happens. I just, there's a part of me believing that that if he's still saying that it's gone down slightly and it keeps going down slightly, then they're just not going to escalate this and that could be it. I could see that happening, because he's such a big deal to this organization, and you know, he's still the face of this franchise, no matter who else is on this team. He's the guy.
So do you think this is just a conspiracy to get Judge into some Rail Riders playoff games?
No, I don't think it's a conspiracy for that, but I think they need to hurry their asses up. If this is going to happen, we need to get some progress on this goddamn hand.
Well, at least, I mean, the Yankees have Detroit coming in, another crummy team, for 4 games, and then the big West Coast trip. It's kind of their last test of the season. 3 at Oakland, 3 at Seattle, and then 3 at Minnesota. And then I know they have the Red Sox in twice in the final two 2 weeks of the season. Hopefully those games matter, but there's a chance they don't really matter. So that West Coast trip, I think, is the last big test we're going to see this team have.
Yeah, unless it's not, right? Unless it's not. Unless they actually go out there and play well, and then there is something more to play for as far as a first, you know, as a first place finish. Or the other thing is, I mean, if these guys were to go out there and stumble on the West Coast, then, you know, then the rest of the games actually matter quite a bit.
Then the rest of them are big games. Yeah, you just, right. And so 27 games in September, 16 of them are on the road.
Yeah, I feel like in, what was it, 2016, where it seemed like from June through the last game of the season that every single series was, you know, you had to win this. It was a must win.
Or playoff series.
It seemed like, you know, they went 500. It didn't matter. They would just go 500, it seemed like. But it was at like a very pivotal time, it felt like, where they were all important. And I think now is very much like that, whether you're playing for the wild card because you're playing those teams, or if you do beat those teams, then, hey, you got a division to pine for too. So, you know, there's still a ton to play for.
Before we get on to the Brian Hoke segment, any final thoughts from Severino's start on Sunday Night Baseball? I know you did a couple minutes just talking about Sevy's start, but you think it's another baby step forward for him?
It didn't feel like a step backwards. That's what I'll say, because it didn't really seem like a step forward either. It was just
neutral. He just was treading water.
But that's what I feel like we've been seeing for the past, what, 5-6 starts? It's like the guy has been, like, you see parts of what you love, and you see the flashes of, you know, those great pitches and the put away stuff. But at the same time, one, I'm not seeing the confidence level. I'm certainly not seeing that swagger is not there. And that to me is very telling about how he's going and how he thinks he's going. If he thinks he's going well and he's got the confidence to do that, we're going to start seeing that more, you know, that confident guy coming off the mound, getting pumped up and just mowing people down and being aggressive with them. And right now, it still seems like he's having trouble putting people away.
That's the big thing. That's exactly what I was going to say, because every single time it's 100 pitches in the fifth inning.
Right.
When it used to be 100 pitches in the seventh or the eighth inning.
Yeah, it's like this has been a friggin' spreading virus on this team. 100 pitches through 5-6 innings. But he's fallen into that same problem where he's just, you know, he's not putting guys away. He's not really pitching to contact as much, or, you know, to outs as much either, because you'd start to see that the pitch count go down too. So there's guys fighting off at bats, I think, too. And that's that to me right there. When you see a guy that's fouling pitches off instead of either making weak contact or just swinging and missing, because, you know, the swings and misses aren't coming at the rate that they were the first half. That's what's troublesome. When you see a lineup that the Baltimore Orioles put out there that with guys that are fighting these pitchers off, you know, first half Severino's blowing those guys away.
12 total swings and misses on the night. 4 on the fastball, 5 on the slider, 3 on the changeup. It's every count, 2-2, 3-2, bunch of foul balls. He just really struggled to put hitters away. And he got the win. It was the 17th win of the season, which leads the American League. And the Yankees are 21-6 in his starts, which is all you can ask for when you send a guy out there to the mound. But we're still holding out hope that the April, May, and June Severino returns, because I've said it 1,000 times. You've said it 1,000 times. I think that's the only way this team can win a World Series.
Well, yeah, that and they need to get guys back healthy and actually playing well too. I mean, there's so many more there are so many more cogs to that equation at this point because of what's happened with injuries. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that they must have. It's a must have. Severino being right, being the guy that they can depend on as their number one, is absolutely one of the most important parts. And yeah, you know, they're going to get him more days off too. They've been resting him longer in between starts. So I expect them to continue to do that. And especially when the rosters expand, I think, you know, we'll start to see some days off potentially for some of these other guys. Or at least, you know, just adding a sixth starter in there. Maybe Sonny Gray gets another start here and there. You can absolutely see that happening, just to get these guys more rest.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, remember to, if you want tickets to that September 15th event, tell us why you are an obsessed Yankees fan in the iTunes reviews. On the show, use hashtag BP Crew to enter that. Also, submit mailbag questions for the upcoming Monday show. You can do that at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can tweet us, or you can post in the Facebook group. Stay tuned for Brian Hoke. And of course, NAS are the letters that spell.
All right, guys, glad to welcome back Mr. Brian Hoke, who's obviously the beat reporter for MLB.com. For the Yankees, been covering the Yankees in and out. Wanted to get him back on the show so that we could get kind of a pulse of what's going on in the clubhouse, in the dugout, and everything that's happening with New York. So, Brian, welcome. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So as of today, we're recording on Wednesday, the day before we release the show, but the Yankees are 6.5 back, 6 in the loss column. Obviously, they've made up some ground in the past, you know, week or so, I think a lot more than most Yankee fans expected. But do you expect a final rush? Do you think that this is possibly something where Boston is actually hitting that, you know, that late season, I don't want to call it a block, but maybe just a little bit of a speed bump with the injury to Chris Sale and just the fact that they haven't really lost much this whole season.
Well, that's the thing. And I think that they are having a historic type of season here. And I think they were overdue to have kind of a dip the way they are here. You know, the way things look earlier in this season, I figured that this was going to go down the wire in the American League East. And these two teams would be very closely connected going into September. And I think that if there's any chance that those last three games at Fenway Park can be meaningful, I think that's going to be awesome to watch. I think it's going to be great theater. Obviously, there's a long way to go between now and then. But as you said, it was a double-digit deficit in the AL East, and now suddenly they look within reach. Having six games head-to-head, I think that it should be fun to have these two teams fighting for something in September.
Now, historically, if you look at the records between the Yankees and the Red Sox, they're pretty damn close to 500. It's difficult for one team to get a serious leg up on, it seems like, on the season series or even the historical series of the two of them. So the Yankees have to continue to do what they're doing right now, and it's something that's kind of evaded them throughout this season, is beat the teams in front of you that you're supposed to beat. Boston's had no problems with that, but when we're going down the stretch, the Yankees' schedule compared to Boston's schedule is much more in favor of the Yankees. So do you see the schedule as one of these big situations too? Because it's going to be tough to win, obviously, five or six games against the Red Sox head-to-head.
Sure, and I think it's meaningful, and when you look at how Boston performed against the rest of the American League East this season, I think that that's the big difference there, that the Yankees were not able to take care of business for the most part against Baltimore. I know they just finished up a four-game sweep against the Orioles, but for the most part, they have struggled with Baltimore. They've struggled with Tampa Bay, and the Boston has just kind of steamrolled past those guys. And when you count those games up at the end of the year, they do make a huge difference. So the Yankees do control their own destiny, which is not something you could have said 2 weeks ago. But, that is a huge part of it, that the Yankees have to take advantage against these softer teams that they're playing here. The White Sox, for example, this week come in. Even though they've been playing better ball of late, that's a series that the Yankees have to win in their own house.
All right, so let's start narrowing down and start talking about the team and some of the things that are happening inside the team right now. Obviously, first base is a big situation in Yankee land. Everybody is looking at Greg Bird and just either, you know, wondering if this guy's ever going to get to the place where we've seen him flash, or that the expectations are, or if this is just going to be the continuing saga of Greg Bird not living up to expectations. And then, you know, the deal with Luke Voit coming in and having that great series against the Orioles, and has continued to play well against the White Sox. So what are you seeing at first base? Is this going to be a platoon for the rest of the year, or is Voit now starting to, you know, edge out the job in Boone's head?
Yeah, you know, Voit's been a nice little surprise for this team. I think that His first impression wasn't great. He went down there to AAA, straightened some things out, came back on a mission, and really tried to not do too much. You always hear guys talk about saying, right, don't try to do too much, you know, just stay within yourself. And I think he's done a good job of that. Obviously, had a big series down there in Baltimore, as you mentioned, impacted the ball a lot, and it showed some of why the Yankees wanted to go get him. But in Bird's case, yeah, the frustration is just kind of oozing out of him at this point. Hit three balls on the button last night, had nothing to show for it. Obviously dropped that ball that was thrown to him in the first inning, and that, you know, I kind of laughed out loud at that, and he basically said, oh man, you know, just what I need right now is to make an error on a very easy play there. So it's been a tough go for Greg Bird. I think a lot of what you've seen is fatigue. I think that, you know, having an aborted spring training there, missing a lot of the season, you know, coming back after not playing a full season last year, I think there's definitely something to that. I don't want to make a ton of excuses for Bird, because at the end of the day, he's got to put up the numbers that the Yankees expect him to, and he clearly has not done that. But you've seen glimpses of it. You saw it last year in September in the postseason. I mean, against dominant pitching, you know, not every left-handed hitter can take Andrew Miller out the way he did. So, you know, it's in there. Those kind of glimpses are what keep the Yankees hanging on. But I think you're right in that Luke Voit has kind of forced his way into the mix here and made Aaron Boone take notice. And I think that he's going to continue to try to ride the hot hand. And it's up to Greg Bird to kind of dissuade him from that and show, no, I should be the first baseman down the stretch. And that's a challenge waiting for Greg Bird here.
So you mentioned fatigue, but do you think, and do you feel that the Yankees think that Greg Bird is fully healthy? Last week, Aaron Boone was talking with Mike Francesa on his show, and kind of, to me, danced around the question a little bit when asked about Bird's health, saying that, you know, Bird feels good enough to produce at a high level. And to me, that sounds like if anybody says I'm good enough to do something, then yeah, there's something going on there. Do you think his foot is still a problem?
Well, I don't think he's 100%. I think he is healthy. I think he's pain-free. But he's coming back from surgery, and I think that's a big thing as well here. You know, it's been a sequence of things for Bird, one thing after the other. Seems like we're having the same conversation almost every year, right, since 2015 when he came up and really performed well down the stretch there, taking over for Mark Teixeira. That feels like it was a million years ago, even though it was only, what, 3 or 4 years in the rearview mirror here. So I think that they're probably pain-free. I don't think he's injured. I don't think he's playing through an injury. I think that it really does take time to get your legs under him, and I think what you've seen here is a guy who just kind of looked a little sluggish. If you looked at his exit velocities, they were in the 80s for a while. Some of the balls he hit last night were in the 90s. That's better. Still not really the way you want to see Greg Bird impacting the ball, but it's something worth watching, where I almost feel like he's swinging a heavy bat at times, and he was for an extended period here, and that's why the offensive numbers look the way they do.
Yeah, and even just before the All-Star break, right, we all thought that was it. That was it. This is Greg Bird coming out of you know, this sluggishness, and he's starting to hit again, and he finally does have his legs under him. And then, you know, when they get back from the All-Star break, he's just, you know, he hasn't found that stroke at all, you know, with the bat. So it's frustrating to watch, I think, for a lot of Yankee fans, and just to see these flashes in the pan. It's almost, you know, when is this flash going to be a more of a consistent ballplayer?
That is what frustrates Yankee fans, is because you've seen glimpses of it. You know it's in there. You know he's got the potential to do it. I mean, this is a guy who was the Yankees' top position player prospect. That wasn't by accident. He's hit some bad luck, and, you know, who knows if he's going to be what the Yankees thought he was going to be, but every time you see a glimpse of it and you think he's turning the corner, it's enough to kind of keep the Yankees on board and say, wait, maybe this is it here.
Speaking of bad luck and these injury bugs that seems like they've taken over the Yankee season at times, but Aaron Judge, obviously a huge story, The original estimate was 3 weeks. Cashman has come out and said that, you know, maybe that was a little presumptuous and a little aggressive, but it's been over a month now. And, you know, the quote that Judge gave talking about the pain being at a 5 2 weeks ago, and now it's at a 4. That's concerning. That's very concerning to me. It sounds like, you know, it's only gone down just a little bit. So is this something that, you know, that you're concerned about, that potentially that Judge may not be back? Because I got to believe they're going to be extra cautious with him.
I don't think there's any guarantee he will be. I still believe he will be back at some point in September. I think that if you can get him back for the last 10 games, you know, 2 weeks of the season where he can start facing some pitching and be ready for the postseason, you know, obviously that's huge for this team because that lineup looks a lot different with Aaron Judge in it. I thought initially the 3 weeks was way, way, way optimistic, considering he had a chip fracture in his wrist, and that has proven true. The Yankees talked at the time about how Judge's pain tolerance was off the charts, and they figured that the 3 weeks would be enough to get him back in there, even if he wasn't 100%. You know, I'm thinking back, you know, I remember the Yankees talking about how jump tolerance was off the charts, and he was a guy who could handle pretty much anything. And I think Judge is probably in that group as well, but, you know, we're talking about a broken wrist here, and whether you want to call it a chip fracture or whatever it is, I mean, it's a broken wrist. So he says it's sore to the touch, it's sore when he rotates his wrist, and when you're talking about trying to turn on a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, I can't imagine that that's going to be very easy for him. So as he did say yesterday, it's down to a 4. I assume that's on a scale of 1 to 10. Hopefully it's not on a scale of 1 to 5. But, you know, doing the simple math, you know, you're running out of time for that to get down to a 0 if it really is taking 2 weeks to drop a point there. So, you know, you hope for some progress. He says it's getting better every couple of days, but the fact that he still has not been able to pick up a bat and even take a dry swing with it, that is concerning to me.
Is this a situation where the Yankees will feel comfortable if there is some pain and it's more of a pain tolerance thing rather than, you know, him going out there and re-aggravating an injury? So is this something that they would send him back out if he was able to manage the pain?
I think so, because this is a situation where they've told him he's not going to require surgery. It's going to heal. Yeah, I think that, look, if this had happened in November, you would have no issue about being ready for spring training. So he'll have the whole offseason to rest. And, you know, he said you want to get it down to a 0. Well, my thought is if it can be at a 1 or a 2, is that enough to get him back in the lineup and start facing some pitching? And so, I mean, that's a question only Aaron Judge really can answer. I mean, he's the only one who knows what's going on in his body. But I think that as soon as he goes in there and says, yeah, it's good enough to swing a bat, they're going to say, go for it. Go ahead. Because, as I said, it's a much different team when you have Aaron Judge in that lineup. And you've seen them call up a guy like a Shane Robinson, and that's a direct result of not having Judge and having to be kind of gauge Giancarlo Stanton. Where he's playing through that tight hamstring, and he's done it without complaint. But I think that getting Judge back would be huge for this team. I think that goes without saying. And they're running out of minor league games for him to get into as well, and I think that's another concern. You might have to manufacture some at-bats for him, send a pitcher down there to Tampa or whatever you do, maybe out on the field at Yankee Stadium and let him rack up some at-bats. But there's a lot of moving parts to it, and it would have certainly been a lot easier for the Yankees had that three-week timetable been accurate.
Do you think they were using that three-week timetable when they were trying to make a decision on whether they need to go out and get another outfielder? Because, I mean, obviously they've been trotting out Shane Robinson into the outfield at a much higher percentage of time than I think anybody expected. So does that original time frame go back down to, you know, the decision that they made to really not go out and get somebody else?
That's a good point. That might have been a part of it. I know that the Yankees have been kind of monitoring the situation out there. They haven't seen anything they wanted to go after. But I figured as soon as a guy like a Curtis Granderson cleared waivers, I thought that made a ton of sense for this team, just based on, if you look at what's down there at system, I know they went and signed a guy, Quinton Derry, just to kind of give some minor league filler there. I mean, a major league team that is talking about winning the World Series really shouldn't have to trot out Shane Robinson as much as they have. Right. They've done that out of necessity, of course, but there are guys who have cleared waivers. I know that Brian Cashman has said it was unlikely to add a guy after July 31 because he didn't think that players were going to get down to the Yankees. Any player of value was going to get claimed ahead of that. But there are some pieces out there. So maybe a couple days left here. I won't be surprised at all if the Yankees go out and get an outfielder. I think that's kind of overdue. Maybe they were just waiting on Judge and believing Judge would come back. But at this point right now, I think you have to operate as though he's not going to come back. And what you do get out of him is going to be a bonus.
Talking about other outfielders, I know that Clint Frazier had started to ramp up some baseball activities. Is there any more news on him? Is this something where, you know, they're expecting him to come back, or is it just kind of a wait and see thing still because it's so hard to, you know, obviously predict any kind of injuries with the going on with the head and you know, his concussion?
Well, that's, and I should have brought that up earlier when we're talking about Shane Robinson. That's a real tragedy. Is, you know, he came into this season, Clint Frazier did, on the outside looking in. It was, how is this guy ever going to get some playing time behind Aaron Hicks and Brett Gardner and Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton and Jacoby Ellsbury? I mean, he's like the sixth man down here. And it turns out you look up here in late August, early September, and if he had been healthy, he was going to get a ton of at-bats for this team, and he would have gotten a real opportunity to show what he could do. Unfortunately, that just didn't happen, and I know he's frustrated down there. He's doing baseball activities in Tampa. That's a very vague term. Sure. But, you know, what that tells me is he's taking some batting practice. He's hitting. He's running a little bit. You know, he's playing catch in the outfield. But until he really starts to get into games, and that hasn't happened yet, it's really hard to kind of accelerate it. So clearly there's some issue here with the post-concussion migraines that is still bothering him and keeping him out of game action. And that really is too bad because what we've seen at Clint Frazier at the big league level, he's a difference maker. And they don't even need a difference maker. They just need somebody who's a little bit better than a you know, league average replacement guy like Shane Robinson is. And Frazier's certainly that. He could have been an impact player in this postseason push, but it just didn't work out that way.
Yeah, and like you said, they're running out of minor league games too for guys to get in there and get their legs under them and get some baseball activity. So certainly the time is, you know, not on his side as far as getting back into something like that. And you know what? Looking forward into Clint Frazier, it's I think everybody talks about the unfortunate circumstances that they're in, but the Yankees are going to have a decision to make, I think, in the offseason, right? With Brett Gardner, with the option and Clint Frazier as a potential guy, you know, at this point now they're not really sure what they're what they're looking at with Clint Frazier with these injuries as well. It seems like Gardner is almost locked in for that option now.
I think that's possible. I think Gardy's such a big part of this team in the clubhouse. I mean, He really is one of the leaders in that room, and I think that if you were going to lose Brett Gardner, you're going to lose a whole lot of leadership and yep. a lot of the personality and pulse of that team, and that's not necessarily a reason to keep a guy just because he's well-liked in the clubhouse, but he's been a good player on both sides of the ball for this team for quite some time. I think that you're right with the uncertainty of that. Frazier's situation with a couple other things there. I think that if I had to bet right now, I'd say Brett Gardner will be back next year. But if you want to look at the positive side of the Clint Frazier situation, had he been healthy going in up to, you know, late July, it's quite possible he could be in another uniform right now. And so maybe this injury, in a way, forced the Yankees to take him off the table and keep him in the organization. Maybe he winds up having a long and successful career in New York that he otherwise wouldn't have had. I know that that's probably a little bit Pollyanna to look at it right now, but you know, the way that his season has gone, you try to take every sliver of optimism you can.
Yeah, I feel like he's deserving of a little glass half full analysis. I think it's the kid deserves that at this point. going on the other side, talking about Severino, we've seen him not be the same guy that we saw in the first half, and obviously it's going to be difficult to duplicate what he did in the first half because he was just so dominant. But you know, we've seen, similar to what we were talking about with some of the other guys, we've seen flashes of that old Severino in the last, I don't know, seven starts or so. But he hasn't really put it all together as a consistent dominant start against even some of these lesser teams. Is there something that they've identified specific to, you know, why they think his struggles, or is this a fatigue thing, or, you know, what have you heard more about Severino?
I think part of it was a fatigue thing. I think the fact that they gave him extra rest going into that start against Baltimore, he pitched pretty well. You saw some positive signs there. There was some life on the fastball. He was pitching up in the zone, down in the zone pretty well. Slider was okay. The changeup was okay. And, you know, I try not to read too much into a decent start against the Orioles because, I mean, they are who they are. I mean, right. That's essentially like sending a guy down to AAA right now and basing it on that because they're fielding a AAA lineup. So, you know, I thought it was funny when Sonny Gray stood up there and after throwing 6 1/3 against Baltimore and said, "I'm one of the best pitchers in this league." Well, you know, the numbers don't bear that out. I think you have to do that as a competitor. You have to think that way, but I wouldn't base too much on one successful start against the Orioles. And so I am looking forward to seeing how Severino looks his next few turns here, because if they can get him back to being what he was in the first half as an all-star, and look, I mean, this guy has still done really well over the last year plus. I think he was due to hit kind of a soft spell there for a little while. If he can kind of kick it into gear, and if they have to give him an extra day to do that, he can be a real difference maker down the stretch, because if he's right, if he's pitching the way he should be in the postseason, I like their chances a whole lot better in a short series.
And given you know, where the Yankees are in the standings, I think it's still conceivable to talk about the wild card game as being the highest possibility. Is Luis Severino still the guy that Boone will give the ball to in a situation like that if it lined up?
He is for me. I think that, you know, obviously we've kind of asked Boone that in a few different ways, and he's sidestepped it, and yeah, as he probably should. It's a month away, and so much can happen between then. But I think that, you know, even forgetting what happened last year in the wild card game where he got one out and they had the bullpen had to go get 26 more outs against Minnesota, I think that Severino would be my guy in a do-or-die, win-or-go-home game. And that's to take nothing away from the other guys who have pitched well on this team. You know, obviously, Jay Happ has pitched well since coming over, and Tanaka's been up and down. And CC's will keep you in the game when you're out there. But I think that Severino's the guy that this team really needs to. If they've got nine innings to play, I'll take my chances with Luis Severino on the mound.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's earned that absolutely. And like you said, we see these flashes. He just seems like he's so close to being back to that guy. Just need to see that maybe one full start of him getting that confidence back. It does seem like Gary Sanchez is getting the confidence back. The reports are he's lost 10 to 15 pounds. When I saw that, I was like, that's a lot of weight to lose in a small amount of time. What's the vibe in the clubhouse or getting Sanchez back, and how are you, you know, what are you hearing about him and how he's feeling?
That really is crazy. I mean, that is a lot of weight. I got to find out what his secret was. maybe give that a try, to be honest with you. You know, Boone has said that Sanchez's conditioning right now is as good as it's been at any point this season, which is almost, to me, kind of like a backhanded compliment. Like, right, you know, why wasn't your conditioning that good earlier in the year? Regardless, I think that if he can come back and be the guy that the Yankees thought he was supposed to be, or anything like he was last season, that, again, is an impact performer in that lineup, because they really haven't had it yet this year. I mean, you know, you look at his numbers last year and compare them to this year, it's night and day, and you say, what happened to Gary Sanchez? Well, maybe that's some of it. Maybe carrying around that extra weight did not work out for him, obviously. I'm looking forward to seeing what this new refreshed version of Gary Sanchez is going to look like out there. The numbers down at Triple-A, he seems to be hitting the ball pretty well. They're saying he's going to catch a couple more games for Scranton and could be back as soon as this weekend. So at the very latest, he should be in the lineup for that Labor Day game against the Oakland A's out there at the Coliseum. I think he could be back even sooner than that, and they could certainly use him, because they've gone pretty far with Austin Romine and Kyle Higashioka behind the plate, and those guys have done a decent job. But if Sanchez is right, I mean, there's no question that he is a premier starter. I really do believe that. And they're going to be a better team if Gary Sanchez can come back and take care of business the way he should be.
Was there any? I don't want to say animosity, you know, different feelings in the clubhouse after the whole not hustling, you know, to the ball, after the quote hustle gate of Gary Sanchez, as Twitter, you know, duly named it. Was there anything in the clubhouse that was that affected any kind of personal relationships or any vibe you caught of the guys, you know, kind of looking at him sideways?
I didn't hear anything about that. I don't think guys thought he was dogging it. I think it turned out he was injured. And so I think that if it had turned out he wasn't injured, maybe that would have been a different case. But that's a legitimate injury, a groin strain, and I think that a lot of guys in that room have dealt with similar things. So I don't think anybody was looking at him sideways and saying, you know, this guy's not hustling, this guy's not trying out there. I think I think that it looked bad. The optics were certainly terrible. The Yankees lost the game because he couldn't get down the first baseline. And let me just say that it was a good thing that he turned out to be hurt, because if it didn't, I think that really does impact what people would have thought of Gary Sanchez for quite a while.
Yeah, no, I agree. Last thing, Brian, the September call-ups are coming up. We've seen some the Yankees are just need bodies at this point, I think, especially on position side, but on the pitching side too. Loaisiga has gotten a couple starts under his belt. Who are some of the guys that you expect to come up and make an impact once the rosters expand?
I'm most excited to see Justus Sheffield. I think that they've kind of put him on that Jobber Chamberlain track as far as hurry up and get to the majors and pitch out of the bullpen. And by the way, I think I've mentioned Jobber twice now in this call, and he hasn't played for the Yankees in what, how many years? So that's crazy. I am looking forward to seeing what he can do at the big league level. I think this kid's got a really good head on his shoulders. I was very impressed by him in spring training. Obviously been looking at the numbers as he's gone from Trenton to Scranton, and now he's knocking on the door at the big leagues. And Boone said he's had a couple of multi-inning relief appearances. They've done okay. They want him to get at least one more down there. And I think when September 1st comes, I'll bring him right up and let him pitch out of the bullpen, and let's see what he's got. And so I think that's the one I'm most looking forward to seeing. You're right, Loaisiga, some of these other guys who you've seen already this season, I'm sure you'll get a guy like a Luis Tessa, and they'll pitch out of the bullpen. But I think that Sheffield, for me, could be a real difference maker if he's going to be what the Yankees believe he can be. And if not, he just gets his feet wet, and that kind of sets the tone for next season as well. So that's the one that jumps to my mind for that.
All right, Brian. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on and kind of giving us the tone of the clubhouse. I think a lot of people are back in it mentally when they see how many games they're out of the from the Red Sox now, and especially with the games back. So I think it's going to be an exciting end of the season. If you want to follow Brian on Twitter, you can get him at Brian Hoke. Brian, thanks again. And by the way, congratulations on the new baby girl.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, well, sleep is in short supply, but that's pretty much the case any postseason tenor chase here. So it's a lot of fun, and hopefully, like I said, those games are meaningful down the stretch in late September, because that's good for baseball, that's good for us as writers, and obviously great for the fans as well.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it, and go Yankees.